Welcome back. I'm Julieta Tlevi. You're watching Stockwit, and joining me in studio this evening to tackle your questions are Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth and Ricus Reardas from PSG Wealth Sandton. If you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS stock and the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at Mrs. Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Ricus, Nick, good to see you this evening. Nick, I have to say, it's a short week, but it may be a very long week indeed, judging from the news flow that was out on SENS today. The level of the volume on the market actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but the close was neither here nor there, down about 0.33%.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When Rick and I were talking on just off air earlier, and we're just saying, like, I was watching my screen. We got one of these hot screens where every 30 seconds the news flow comes through. I think at one stage was 7 minutes before the last story. But this is worldwide. You know, it's not just a South African thing. It just feels like we started the U.S. earnings season on Friday. There was a scurry of excitement. We had a few Chinese numbers. They were out the blocks. S&P pretty close to an all-time high on the Friday, and a good, strong session. Then today, with four-day weeks, and everyone's talking about a lot of holidays, and I think Japan shut for something like 10 days, it's all of a sudden slowed down a little bit. So I'm not sure. But it was unusually quiet today.
Yeah. I mean, Rick, I suppose we're going to be looking for catalysts to propel us in either direction.
Could it just be a slow drift higher?
Actually?
Well, we've got Chinese GDP coming out. We've got our inflation figures on Wednesday. We've got retail sales. So there's something to talk about with that's going to have a huge effect with, as Nick says, I think a lot of people not really in the spirit, if at all, or physically present in the market. Who knows? So, yeah, I think maybe extreme moves on low volumes for the next week or so.
Okay, well, there was one extreme move today, actually, and that was EOH. And there is a question on it. So EOH has had some, it's been marked more by spectacular declines in the last few months, but today it had a spectacular update. It was up 14%. Maybe low volumes account for that. But there is a question saying, it's had a spectacular fall for various reasons. Surely it has an intrinsic net asset value, and what is that value? So they came out with this trading statement, was it Friday?
It was Friday.
Saying that where they've impaired the business to the tune of about 11 Rand a share. Now, the share price is trading at about, 13 or 14 Rand. So that's a pretty chunky impairment. And this is the question, right, for retail investors and management. What is the value of EOH at this point in time? Is it what the share price is trading at, or can you extrapolate other value?
It is difficult, but I hesitate to say it might become clearer tomorrow when they have the earnings. But it really is quite a depressing story for everyone concerned and shareholders. But you'd like to think I always like to think the markets are fairly efficient. You know, they sold the story going in, the news broke, it's been an unmitigated disaster, and all of a sudden I think management have been pretty good, and Mr. Collier, about getting all the news flow out there, throwing the kitchen sink at it. Trading update on Friday, at one point the stock was down, I think, 20%, broke through 10 Rand a share. And finally, I think we're starting to see a little bit of love in the share. We had some buyers coming in ahead of the earnings tomorrow. But going back to your question, it's difficult to extrapolate. You know, what is EOH actually worth at this point? But I'd hesitate to say. I think it's worth more than the current share price.
Okay.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I think it's always been, EOH has consisted of three parts. First of all, equipment, then support, and design. Now, the equipment bit's got a bit of a hit on the Microsoft license problem, so there's a problem there. Your support and design are people, and also acquisitions of people by buying into companies. So it's difficult to put a value on that.
But they clearly did, because they used to carry lots of, you know, they did these acquisitions with phenomenal regularity. They used their script,
and then
they would carry goodwill on their books.
Precisely, which they've now written down. You've got to keep the people. You can't buy more because your share price is down in the
trenches.
So you must keep your people, and I think that's why it's difficult to do a net asset value, because it depends on somebody who can walk out. And it's not as if the type of person that works for you for EOH, which is in the IT industry, it's obviously there's a lack of demand for that kind of skill.
Yeah.
So it is something you can lose very quickly if somebody comes and says, well, I have a better offer.
I mean, can you also, I mean, or can you extrapolate so what their revenue is? And they did tell us that, although the figure doesn't immediately spring to mind, I think it's in the region of 8 billion. I stand to be corrected, though I can check during the break. And they said what they think what the earnings will be on that figure. I mean, can you extrapolate a value from their cash, from their earnings, and from their revenue? Or do you have to look into the future and try and see what the sustainable future cash flows of the business are going to be?
I think a little of both. I mean, a lot of these businesses, especially with licensing and what they do, is very much future cash flow projections. I mean, you literally, as trying to analyze a share like this, you're literally having to discount the future, so to speak. Like, where's the level to get in it? I just want to inject though as well, it's not just about the Microsoft. It's not just Microsoft. EOH is very much more than just Microsoft. Yeah. They have payroll business, human resources. They have share option schemes management. They have, I could list endlessly. We analyze the share. It's not just Microsoft. Unfortunately, the markets are very punishing. And they look at, say, the biggest company in the world is turning away business. This must be something wrong. And yes, maybe there were a few skeletons in the closet, but you've got to say they really have been doing everything transparently now to get to the bottom of it. And I think, I look forward to tomorrow to see what the latest update is.
Yeah.
In other words, I don't think they're worth nothing, but, but numbers coming out, let's take a look. Let's see what they retain and what cash they can generate with that.
Yeah. Okay. So tomorrow will be a very interesting results presentation. Then moving on, this person has sent us an email saying, "Will interest rates in the developed world?" Okay. So I know it's less a stock specific question, but it has been maybe one of the reasons behind this V-shaped recovery that we've seen in the stock markets, the expectation that there won't be an increase in interest rates this year. So his question is, will interest rates in the developed world ever normalize again? In 2018, a marginal upward adjustment of interest rates sent markets into a quick and vicious tailspin. Then the Fed quickly toned down their talk, turned dovish, which resulted in a quick V-shaped recovery. Can it be so easy and straightforward? Low rates forever? Surely the four horsemen of the apocalypse eventually will ride into town with devastating consequences.
Who's going first?
you, Nick.
Okay.
The dubious look on your face is definitely you.
Look, if you have to, it's actually a very good question, because the entire world economy and capital markets moves around your cost of money, your price of money. What is your price of money is set by long-term interest rates, the price of the and people forget that interest rates aren't necessarily so much as set by the governments. They are set like
by
the US.
Markets.
They're set by the markets, yeah. Absolutely. So the markets are implying that we're going to have lower rates for longer, contrary to what the dot plots and the Feds are saying. No, we're going to. Okay, they're putting the dovish flip recently, but the market is very much disconnected to where policymakers are saying. I do think though the guy's right in that we are in a precarious position in that the ECB have painted themselves into a little bit of position. There's probably very much a bond bubble out there. We have something like 17 or 18 countries trading at negative interest rates. So if you want to know what's going to happen in the future, you're right. You do have to watch what these interest rates are going to do. And I think it's going to be a very interesting year after a 10-year bull market to see where we go. Because at some point, they have to normalize. Yeah. You can't have interest rates sitting at levels they are now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rickus, do they have to normalize? Is this the new normal?
I think they have to, and there's one reason for it. Now, to answer the listener's question, I can say why, but I can't say when, because saying both together is, that's doomed for failure. But if you take a look at US employment, it's at record levels, and the growth in wages are picking up. That cannot hold. In other words, you're going to run out of people. We've got to pay them more, and that is going to, in the end, give you inflation, which will then have an effect on interest rates. Okay. Now, that's the why. As to when it's going to happen, don't ask me.
I will just interject quickly there as well, just adding to Rick's saying. So the Federal Reserve also, if there's all this talk about recessions and all that as well, at some point, most policymakers want to get interest rates to a certain level where there's a cushion if there is a recession. Yeah. You know, they haven't got much room to move. If the world starts slowing down, which appears it is, and interest rates are 2.5%, it gives you 250 basis points back to zero. There's not enough there. So the feeling was when Powell and them came in was to try to get them rates back to a normalized level, that maybe there was a little bit of ammunition. So that's my feeling anyway.
And the four horsemen of the apocalypse with devastating consequences scenario, in other words, if interest rates go higher, will that result in markets, in some sort of cataclysm on stock markets?
I don't know. I mean, interest
especially
rates...
if the market itself is contributing factor behind the interest rates.
Well, it's not going to be good news for the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can't be higher interest rates, and you tend to move away from equity into money. Is it going to be an apocalypse? Highly unlikely, because it hasn't been previously.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's a lot of debt in the world. In fact, I mean, there's a lot of comparisons. Everyone's saying, is this with all these IPOs coming to the market now, is this the next bubble, etc.? This is very different to 2008. 2008 was very much a housing bubble. It was very much a bubble in U.S. housing and in the financial services, etc. We have a massive debt problem now, but it's more on the corporates. There's a lot of corporate debt out there. So, yes, and seconding what Rick is saying, high interest rates will probably hurt some of the corporates out there. But
But when it will
when
happen,
it does,
who knows?
Yeah.
And there's another question. This is when your tweets come back to haunt you. Nick recently tweeted about how the VIX and currency volatility is relatively low at the moment.
It is.
Also, speculative net short positions in VIX futures is approaching a record, which could lead to big short squeeze. Does he think now is a good time to go long of Vega, given how cheap it is and the potential for a short squeeze? What's Vega?
For Greek to me.
Vega is your...
Take your dirty puns and leave them at the door is what we say.
So Vega is your volatility. Yeah. So look, I've been an option trader for most of my career. So what I've seen recently is the VIX, which is known as the fear gauge, and then you also get the one in Europe called the VDAX, which is the DAX, and they're quite good contrarian indicators. When things get like very, very complacent, you have VIX, and in this case the Vega, which is the component of pricing an option, gets very low. Right now it is at levels where I would say be cautious. And typically it's very, it's a reverse correlated. So in the S&Ps, or you have, so what happens is, I'm getting a little complicated for the average viewer, but it's based on the at-the-money options on the S&P 500. So it'll take the S&P 500 and it'll work out the average price across the board. The moment it's sitting something around 13.5%, 14%, something around there, it's very cheap. Typically when it's this cheap, it's time to be cautious, because you can buy insurance relatively cheaply when the market is high, because people get complacent.
So now is the time to go long the VIX.
When your tweets come back to haunt you, yes.
I would say yes. That you would, in other words, get yourself some insurance against volatility in the market. So when markets start falling, or there's a little bit more fear, VIX tends to go up.
There hasn't been a fire on your house for years and years and years and years, and you've never needed your insurance, and it's cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. At some point, there's going to be a fire.
Yeah.
Terrible example.
Do you want to add something? Okay, well, can I get your thoughts after the break, if you don't mind? And if you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS us, email us, or tweet us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the moment. At the start of this Easter week, the S&P down almost a fifth of a percent, the Nasdaq off a quarter, and the Dow Jones trading about a tenth of a percent in the red. Across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100. I think, is the FTSE 100 closed today, bank holiday, or is it just flat? Pardon my ignorance there, but the CAC 40 is up a fifth of a percent, and the DAX is a tenth of a percent in the green. I shall get back to the VIX question. Nick, you explained it pretty well and indicated that now would be the time to go long VIX to get yourself some insurance against market volatility. Ricus, do you have anything to add there?
Just in short, I think what Nick is saying, when things get too quiet, it's bound to get busy, and at the moment we are very quiet.
Yeah, Okay. All right, moving back to some South African specific stocks. There's quite a lot of questions on bank shares this evening. So the one is, what are the panel's views on the Nedbank share price and how much more upside before the elections? Then someone else is asking about Standard Bank. And then there's another question asking which South African bank you would prefer currently. Okay, so the first one, Nedbank. How much more upside to go, also ahead, particularly ahead of the elections?
Okay, I'm going to service on. I can't exactly speak at how much upside Nedbank has got, but I can answer the question on the banking, the banks in a general term, in that they've been very strong for a reason, because the our government bonds have all of a sudden reversed completely after Moody's gave us a bit of a get out of jail free pass. The rand has been stronger. Our government bonds have been stronger. Our real rate of interest is good. Our the carry trade is alive and well. All the recipients of that flow usually flow into the bank. So that's why the general banking index is been strong. And quite frankly, today I actually scratched my head at one point. I mean, ABSA was up almost 3% today with a weaker rand. So, you know, if you want to know where foreigners put their money, that's exactly what's happening now.
Yeah, as Nick mentioned, a bunch of these guys went ex-dividend in the past 2 weeks. And they've just taken that in their stride. And something like Nedbank... no wonder the viewer's querying was, I've got about a 2.90 technical level that it can pretty easily get to, I think, within the next week, considering the strength in the whole sector. And the same goes for Standard Bank and APSA and First Rand, even at First Rand's price, which is definitely not cheap at the moment.
The viewers, I think the viewers just need to keep an eye on that R156, so that the side of continuing sort of yield. As long as that yield stays low and it's edging closer and closer to 8%, implies the banks will be in good space for now.
Do you have a particular pick on South African banks, Rikus?
I'm sort of stuck with the one I've got, which is First Rand, which is expensive, so that doesn't mean go out and buy it. So I'm sort of staying with momentum on that. But
Nick, how about you? You don't. It's always interesting. You don't talk about Capitec.
Because I can't.
Okay, you can't. Nick can though. You as a collective.
So Capitec has been a cracking share for everyone being involved, and it really has. But when you start to measure valuations of banks and financial services companies, one of the key metrics is not necessarily just PE, although Capitec is very expensive. You also look at your price to book, etc. So most banks, back in the day when things were really iffy, price to books were trading often under parity on some banks. South African banks usually trade between 1.5 and 2 times price to book. Capitec's on a 7. So it's a great story, and I love what they're doing, but a great company doesn't necessarily mean it's still a good investment at current levels. So I'd just be someone that's buyer beware at these levels. It's expensive.
And other banks at the moment, you say they normally trade between 1.5 to 2
They're verging on the more expensive side, but nowhere near what Capitec's doing.
Cheek. Yeah, that is pretty steamy. Then please ask the panel's opinion on Telkom and Astral. Rickus. Telkom has had a really good run. I find it vaguely perplexing.
So do I, and it's pretty close to about 80 something around. I think they were up 2 or 3% early in the morning when I looked at it, and I thought, why? Now obviously there's been a huge turnaround in Telkom, and they've been cutting costs and they've been gaining market share. I just wonder whether, considering the environment that Telkom companies are operating in South Africa, with a lot of legislation coming through, I don't know whether that's just not overdone. I mean, I won't be rushing out to go and buy it at these levels.
Certainly, one of our guests last week said, if you've got Telkom and you manage to ride this run, cash in. I sort of wish that maybe the government could cash in, because now would be a really good time to sell. Unlike, you know, selling our oil stocks at $28 a barrel, which in hindsight was always going to be a bad move. Nick, any thoughts on Telkom? Maybe the divergence between Telkom and the other telecom stocks on the JSE. So you've had Telkom doing really, really well, as opposed to, say, Blue Label Telecoms or Vodacom or MTN.
Or pick anyone. They've all been, besides MTN's little pop in the last day or two, they've all been under significant pressure. Yeah. Look, the cellular companies have been under increased pressure by regulation, with data prices and margins being squeezed. and there's been increased sort of pressure by a lot of regulators around the world to cut data prices, especially even in places like South Africa. So I can understand that story. But telecom, I don't get, you know, it's, yes, they are in the data space, but it's still a majority of their businesses, copper wiring under the ground and ADSL, and they're not that much anywhere near the fiber space that everyone else is putting in. So I don't know, but yes, you're right. If you've got them and you still hold them, probably not a bad time to cash in.
Mm, okay. And Astral Foods also came up last week. It's interesting to see you get sort of clusters of questions around certain stocks. I don't know why Astral is in uppermost in some people's minds at the moment.
I think it's because of where they were, where they've come down to. I think about 150, 160 at the moment. And they were at, 300. In other words, so they've almost halved. Mm. So you've got to ask yourself, okay, at current prices and considering the input costs being maize, in other words, is that going to hold? And is that going to come through in the cash flow? And are we sitting with a dividend that's maintainable? And is it a cyclical pick at the moment? But you're in the chicken industry, and heaven forbid if you get it wrong. If you get it right, then you get the increases like we've seen where it did go to 300. Mm. I don't think it's as expensive as it was. I think if they can organize their costs, it's probably the chicken producer to be in if you want to be in that market at all, which I don't want to be.
Okay. Nick, any thoughts on any sort of agri-stock?
Just touching on to comments Rick has made on maize. I mean, yellow maize, white maize is one of the main food components to the chicken industry. It was over 3,000 Rand recently, and that is traditionally quite expensive. So there is the import costs, tying exactly what you're saying. It's been expensive.
Yeah, okay. So now there's a question that it does sort of lead into your stock pick, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Saying your analyst recently favoured Investec, which performs well with a stronger rand. They also say that in the long term the rand will weaken. Is this not a contradiction? Please advise.
My stock pick.
elaborate on it. Okay. So Investec PLC is actually your stock pick this evening.
Yeah.
But is there not an inherent contradiction in?
Yes, there is. So the view is correct in that typically a weaker rand normally doesn't benefit banks. We know that. This is a slightly different analysis in that it's underperformed all the other banks of recently. It is in the process of corporate action. They're spinning off the asset management business. And traditionally, we feel that it's been held back by Brexit problems. They got in the wrong space in the UK with all the noise that's happening. The pound's been all over the place. And we feel that the valuation should be closer to 110, I think our analyst has got it at. It's had a recent pop-up recently. I think it's just back over close to 91, 92 today. Mm-hmm. Off the lows of 77 as of recent. Mm. But it's, you know, we're in the game of often you have to sort of compare apples with apples. And if you had to compare apples with apples, this has lagged the whole basket. It's trading on a single-digit P of 9. Now I'm busy telling you my whole stock pick. But it's just, you know, you want to pick a stock that we think has got potential upside, as you always do. And we feel this one is really just had undue temporary pressure with Brexit and everyone trying to figure out, waiting for the spin-off to happen. When the asset management spin-off was spoken about originally, and it was like the worst-kept secret in South Africa, we all know it was going to happen, the stock went to 111. Yeah. Then it drifted all the way back to 70 with a little Brexit shenanigans, 77. So that's the reason why. So it's not, don't let your investment decisions confuse you with what's happening in the currency, although you do have to put it in some part, being a South African resident. Yeah. But this should, the outperformance should offset any sort of currency movements.
Okay.
Okay.
Ricus, I don't know if you want to have a quick comment on Investec, or we could just directly go to your stock.
I can see why Nick likes it. I would like to have the asset spun off and actually a new direction, because the Investec of old wasn't doing it. Mm. And you can see that in the price going basically sideways. If they can change this around, if it becomes leaner and meaner and new management as well, and specifically Brexit gets settled, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and also, unfortunately, it wasn't just Brexit. I mean, it was the subprime crisis. It was Kensington. Mm. How many presentations Australia. Have we gone to mm. where they, you know, would lamented kind of Kensington working, Kensington, which was the book that they bought in 2000.
And you're right. I mean, the stock has been 80, 90 something rand for 5 years. It's done nothing.
Very frustrating. Okay, Rick, is your stock pick this evening?
Something else has been at the same level for 5 years until recently with the announcement of Disney Plus, which is their new subscription service in the way of Netflix.
Netflix, for example.
For example. So I think what has happened is that a company that's been fairly mature all of a sudden has got a growth profile. They're going to spend a heck of a lot of money in the next 5 years, but they are so cash generative, and I think for starters, and they are saying, well, if we get enough subscribers, we'll be cash positive in 5 years. I think that's an understatement. They'll probably do better than that. So I think it's a great opportunity to get into something that's got a hell of a lot of scope, production capabilities, a good historic library, and a very good price, $7 a month roundabout. So it's now a growth company, almost.
Yeah. I also like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we leave it. James, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. Rikus Riedis is from PSG Wealthsampton. And we'll be back with more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good night. So Investec PLC is actually your stock pick this evening.
Yeah.
But
so
is there not an inherent contradiction in
Yes, there is. So the view is correct in that typically a weaker rand normally doesn't benefit banks. We know that. This is a slightly different analysis in that it's underperformed all the other banks of recently. It is in the process of corporate action. They're spinning off the asset management business. And traditionally, we feel that it's been held back by Brexit problems. They got in the wrong space in the UK with all the noise that's happening. The pound's been all over the place. And we feel that the valuation should be closer to 110, I think our analyst has got it at. It's had a recent pop-up recently. I think it's just back over close to, I think, 91, 92 today. Mm-hmm. Off the lows of 77 as of recent. Mm. But it's, you know, we're in the game of often you have to sort of compare apples with apples. And if you had to compare apples with apples, this has lagged the whole basket. It's trading on a single-digit P of 9. Now I'm busy telling you my whole stock pick. But it's just, you know, you want to pick a stock that we think has got potential upside, as you always do. And we feel this one is really just had undue temporary pressure with Brexit and everyone trying to figure out, waiting for the spin-off to happen. When the asset management spin-off was spoken about originally, and it was like the worst kept secret in South Africa, we all know it was going to happen, the stock went to 111. Yeah. Then it drifted all the way back to 70 with the Brexit shenanigans, 77. So that's the reason why. So it's not, don't let your investment decisions confuse you with what's happening in the currency, although you do have to put it in some part being a South African resident. Yeah. But this should, the outperformance should offset any sort of currency movements.
Okay.
Okay.
Rikus, I don't know if you want to have a quick comment on Investec, or we could just directly go to your stock.
I can see why Nick likes it. I would like to have the asset spun off and actually a new direction, because the Investec of old wasn't doing it. Mm. And you can see that in the price going basically sideways. If they can change this around, if it becomes leaner and meaner and new management as well, and specifically Brexit gets settled, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and also, unfortunately, it wasn't just Brexit. I mean, it was the subprime crisis. It was Kensington. Mm. How many presentations Australia. Have we gone to mm. where they, you know, would lamented mm. kind of Kensington working, Kensington, which was the book that they bought in 2000.
And you're right. I mean, the stock has been 80, 90 something rand for 5 years. It's done nothing.
Very frustrating. Okay, Rick, is your stock pick this evening?
Something else has been at the same level for 5 years until recently with the announcement of Disney Plus, which is their new subscription service in the way of Netflix.
Netflix, for example.
For example. So I think what has happened is that a company that's been fairly mature all of a sudden has got a growth profile. They're going to spend a heck of a lot of money in the next 5 years, but they are so cash generative. And I think for starters, and they are saying, well, if we get enough subscribers, we'll be cash positive in 5 years. I think that's an understatement. They'll probably do better than that. So I think it's a great opportunity to get into something that's got a hell of a lot of scope, production capabilities, a good historic library, and a very good price, $7 a month roundabout. So it's now a growth company, almost.
Yeah. I also like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we leave it. Jens, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nick Quinn is from Sanlam Private Wealth. Rikus Riedis is from PSG Wealthsandton. And we'll be back with more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good night. Thank you.